All right, so let's just start by talking about our habits that we've looked at. I guess I would first ask a question. Are people starting to, are you starting to think about these as you go through the week? Hopefully that's the case. I know for me, part of it is because I'm teaching tonight, but it's something I've been thinking about, and in some of my responses I've been thinking about how it aligns with some of these things we're trying to do. And we started up talking about being proactive, that we wanted to make a change, that we have self-awareness, that we want to do better. And then we spent a couple lessons talking about beginning with the end in mind. Where do we want to end up? We spent a lot of time talking about our destination and how to keep going in the right direction, even though there's constantly things that are in our way, or things kind of pushing us off course. We know what that destination is, and we continue to follow it. So a very important thing, we spent some time talking about a mission statement and really being able to identify those things that are important to us and really help with habit three, which is putting first things first. And it's hard to put first things first if we don't really know what is important to us. Being able to look at that mission statement and understand what we're trying to achieve, and then how is the ways that I'm spending my time, the things that I'm spending my money on, how does that align with what I say is really my important things that I want to get done? So something we always need to adjust, and it just seems like it's always a struggle to just keep our priorities right. You know, it doesn't matter. We can be really locked into things, and it doesn't take a whole lot to take us off, does it? Some sort of crisis, or something that is kind of out of the ordinary can really throw us off. Keeping the most important things first for us, and that idea of urgent versus important. We've got all these urgent things in life, and really being able to look at things that, you know, there's just some things that we can take off our plate that, there's nothing wrong with them, but, you know, they're distracting us from these more important things. And we use that illustration of the big rocks, put the big rocks in first and making sure we have time for that. Very important. And that will take us into our fifth habit. I like the way this slide, Larry shared this in the last class, that think win-win. This is the root. This is what we're trying, kind of the foundation of it. And seeking first to understand and then to be understood, this is the route that we take. The method or pathway that leads to rich, interdependent interaction, this ability to get out of yourself and really into the head and heart of someone else. So we're going to spend some time talking about that. Hopefully you have the book and have been able to look at some of these examples. The book is, there's a lot of, Susan and I were talking about the other night, there's just a lot of detail in there, and sometimes it's kind of hard to get through all of it, especially in the timelines we're talking about now. But, you know, even if you don't finish the book, you can get kind of the basic concepts out of the book and go back and read it. I think it'll be useful for everyone. But the book, and I really messed myself up because I've been listening to the business version and doing the family version at the same time. So I heard the story, and I don't know which book it came out of, so I'm trying to find things in there. So I may refer to things and get that kind of messed up. But I think, just some very basic, smart ways to improve ourselves and hopefully what we've done here, and I'm going to try to do a better job of it tonight, is really pull in those Bible passages that, you know, these are foundations within God's Word. This is more about our technique for achieving some of these things, but we're talking about God's Word being able to transform us, to change us, and these are just some methods that will help us and allow us to do some of these things in a more efficient manner and have the outcome we want. So anything as far as where you are now and what you've been trying to do as far as any observations about these habits and kind of where you are in trying to embrace these and put them into your own life. Have anything you want to share?
I don't know how you disagree with any of them.
Very good. You know, it's like I said, some of this is pretty common sense, but common sense isn't so common. Heard that saying. It's things that are, we often don't think about when we read them. It's like, oh yeah, I really need to be doing that. I think a lot of these things kind of fall into that bucket. And then it's up to us to figure out how we can keep these momentum. I mean, once the class is over, is it in there? How can we keep doing these things and follow through? And I was really looking forward to this. You know, we've got several classes where Larry's been up here teaching. He scans the room and comments that people are looking at their wives or getting elbowed. So I'm going to be able to look at Larry and see if Lynn looks at him. And if he does, if that happens, I'm going to let y'all know.
We can move.
Yeah. He's been calling
okay.
All of us.
That way she can elbow me directly.
Yeah, he can see you. He'll be so happy.
Anything to help.
Hi, baby.
I didn't go to nail bowling. All right, so let's jump into the class. I thought this illustration was pretty interesting. We've looked at some other of these, but this one kind of has a different, this is really about perception. So if you look at this picture, and then you looked at the next one in the book, and I'm assuming maybe some people don't have the book, but if you look at this picture after looking at the first one, then you probably, what do you see there? Then you see that, probably most people see the injury. If you look at it carefully, you can, you know, you might see the other picture. You start with a picture in the back, toward the end of the chapter that shows the Eskimo. And then you look at this picture, you might see the Eskimo first rather than the Indian. And just really illustrating, Paula, do you see the Eskimo in there?
You know what? I see it.
here's his little hoodie up there and this little spear. So,
and I'm so proud because I don't think it was that easy.
We'll give you the gold star for the class. You found the Eskimo. But really the point is that I could, if I saw the Eskimo and Paula saw the Indian, we could both sit here and go back and forth on what we saw and explain it to each other. And we would both, you know, there wouldn't be really a right or wrong there. We'd both see different things. And this is really kind of illustrating the idea of we have different perceptions on things. And something that, for those that have been married, this is something you probably learned really quick, that, you know, you have different perceptions as you get into the marriage. Here's the Eskimo at the end of the chapter. So if you saw that first and then we went back to the other picture, you might see it a little clearer. So as you think about perception, so what does that really mean? If you think about your marriage and coming in and maybe some of the things that you've been exposed to, some of your experiences and the way you view things, how different that can be, you know, between one person and another person. So, you know, if you're, my family life and Susan's family life was very different. So, you know, we came in with different perceptions on things. And we may view things a little different. Now, that's one thing, you know, I didn't, it's things I may not have understood when we were first married or things she didn't understand about me. So I think it's an important thing to realize, and you know we'll spend a lot of time talking about judging and really making quick decisions or just kind of giving our opinion on things without really understanding. So I think that's really the core concept that we're going to talk about. And it was funny because I read this and. I had been reading this, and I saw this story I thought I'd share with you. kind of to illustrate this idea of understanding, this was on LinkedIn, and I just happened to be reading it, and I don't know, Brandon Matthews, he's a professional golfer, he was in a tournament, and he was, I think they went to a playoff, and they were on the final hole, and the guy that he was going against, he sunk this long putt. And so this Brandon here needed to make his to continue playing and have a chance to be a champion. So as he was getting ready to putt, he putted, and as soon as he did, somebody let out this loud yell. And he missed the putt. You know, it definitely interfered with his swing. So he went back to the, you know, he looked around trying to figure out who it was, you know, there was a big crowd of people. He went back to the clubhouse and was really upset about it and was asking about it. And what he found out was there was a person in the audience that had cerebral palsy. And when he got excited, he let out a yell. So it was a total accident. And it was, there was no ill will there. And so when he found that out, he went out and actually met the man that caused the yell and may have cost him the tournament. And he actually spent some time with him and signed some. And he actually was his fan. So I use that as an example of, you know, how different just a few minutes meant when this golfer understood, you know, what the real situation was. And, like I said, I just happened to see that. And we could all come up with examples. There's several examples in the book about misunderstandings, things really that a person interpreted one way, and you know there was no ill will there, and really it was about being able to understand where the other person was with it. So, just an example I saw yesterday, I thought I'd share. I thought there was several examples in the book, and I think probably with our kids. You may think of an example, maybe a harsh example. I read one, and I couldn't find it in the book, so maybe I saw this in a business book. But there was a story about a father whose child kept going around the corner of the building, and kept saying, "If you go around the corner, you're going to get spanked." So the kid would go around the corner, and he'd spank the child. Is this in the book? You may hear this story.
Read the
book. Okay. Maybe some people. But the kid kept going around the corner, and he kept spanking the kid when he came back. And then, so anyway, the kid comes back around. He's got tears in his eyes, and he said, "Dad, what's a corner?" So real small kid. So that one kind of breaks your heart, you know, when you read something like that, and just this idea of. A lot of times we have the wrong, we have the wrong understanding of what the situation is. It's true with our kids a lot. I love some of the examples that are in the book about. There was one about the optometrist. You know, that you go in to see the optometrist, and he just gives you his glasses and says, "These have worked for me. You know, I've had these for 10 years." And the person puts them on, and you know. See worse, and it's like, well, they why are you so ungrateful? You know, why I gave you something, these weren't great for me, why don't you try harder? Things like that. And the point is that, you know, a lot of times we're in situations and, you know, we kind of bring up the things that we immediately think about rather than trying to understand, you know, why is a person why are they having this problem. I think the other example they used, I felt, was good. It was about a student, one of their children, they were in school, and they didn't like school anymore. And so, you know, the parent, before they found out the issue with school, they just pleaded, "Tell me, I really want to understand." And as soon as they said it was school, they got blasted. So I think, you know, that that trust and understanding is something that's difficult, you know, especially when it's something we feel emotional about. You know, we, you know, for a lot of us parents, which is the value of an education, and, you know, just hearing your kids say that, it's like, what? You know, it's like, you know, you've been in school for 3 years, and you can't quit now. And, you know, there's just all kinds of reasons that we would jump to and react to it quickly. And really the admonition is that we talk through these things and try to understand what the issue is, and then that listening and understanding allows us to be understood. It allows us to have influence. So, you know, it definitely makes sense, and we can get in some difficult situations by jumping to conclusions. I'll pause there. I've been talking a lot. Does anybody have any comments or anything from the book they want to share or experience they'd like to share? All right.
That story is in the book, Page 206, by the way.
All right. Thank you. Come on, Steve.
I can't help but think that comment made, I think, on the first was that we tend to judge ourselves by our intention and other people by their actions. And I think about, like, when you're driving on the road and, you know, when you honk your horn, you are trying to be understood before you understand it. Maybe they're letting somebody in, maybe there's a problem on the road, there's a danger, you know, and it's very easy to get the, I need to say what I need to say out first, when it really needs to be something you would need to hold back, so you have a clearer picture of what's going on.
Very good, very true.
That just happened to me. Oh, the guy was honking at me, because the light was green. But he didn't realize the lady in his wheelchair was coming across the street and made the complete exit to the sidewalk. And he was sitting down, his horn, he wanted me so badly to go.
Because in Atlanta, they may have let you run over. That's a good story, though. We often don't know what's just in front of us or what people are dealing with. It's difficult. So one of the advice we get in the book is to diagnose before prescribing. So to diagnose, you've got to listen. You know, hear what the problem is and understand it. You know, just don't throw out how you'd solve this. And I know for me that's a hard thing to do at work. People come to me with what my opinion on things, and Susan probably doesn't want my opinion on everything, especially opinion that's not based on everything, you know, all the details. So our environment at work is bam, bam, you know, things are quick decisions where things are going through, and, you know, that doesn't work for other relationships. So probably doesn't work too well at work either, to be honest with you, making decisions like that, but sometimes that's the best we can do. But the importance of seeking to understand before you influence. And for that, the goal is not, I'm just going to listen to them. You know, sometimes we just listen, and that's good. But the habit is to understand first so we can be understood. So part of that in the family setting is that there are things that we need to weigh in on, that we need to help with. But really, first of all, we do need to understand, because we may change our opinion of what, you know, the answer would be. But also that listening helps with the influence that we have as far as the advice we're going to give, that emotional bank we talked about, and gaining trust there. It's important to listen and actually process it, not just sit there and pretend like you're listening. We'll talk about that a little bit. One of the main reasons behind communication breakdown is that people involved interpret the same events differently. That picture we looked at, you know, there's different things. And one of the examples they use is the thermostat. I know in my house there's two opinions on thermostats. I'm hot, Susan's cold. So church building in there in the auditorium. A lot of people are, I think everybody's cold, but some people are freezing cold, and some people are just cold. But a lot of differences there, and that's just a quick example. There's just, as we mentioned earlier, there's things that that we grew up with, or things that are kind of touchy items are painful things in our lives, and that other people may not know about that. And we just need to be aware and just realize there are different perceptions of what is what's spending too much. There's even things as simple as the finance. There's a show that Susan watched with her sometimes, where the people are trying to find a house to buy, and one of the married couple has a has a budget that's $450, and the other one has a budget that's $350. So they already know what they make together, but there's even the difference. There's differences there, because some people are more risk averse and others are are not. So just understanding those differences and being able to talk through them goes a long way. And there's different expectations. I thought these examples were pretty funny, but they're probably funny because they're very true. Her marriage expectations: everything is sunshine, daffodils, happily ever after. It's from the book. When the reality of marriage and family life hit, she spent much of her time feeling disappointed, frustrated, and dissatisfied. So that could be the man or the woman there. That whatever your expectations are coming into something, in the book, really pointed out that expectations kind of defines our satisfaction with something. And the other example of that is, I know things are going to be tough, there's going to be challenges, but when something good happens, you can feel very grateful about that. So, recently heard we had an author come to work and talk to us about happiness, and which I kind of thought applied to some of this, but one of his things was he would just go and write down what he could be grateful for that day. Those three things he was grateful for. And write them down. And we talked earlier about the power of writing things down. But, really finding something that was positive and making yourself aware of it and really helping, I think, with some of the expectations, expectation setting. He had a lot of turmoil in his life, but he was able to use his techniques to kind of get himself back on track. So, he had some examples even of, he said, if a husband and wife will sit down together and journal together and put things they're grateful for, they, with no other conditions, they were 30% more likely to stay together in their marriage. So just things, doing those kind of things together. But I think a lot of that has to do with our expectations what we see our life is supposed to be like, or what we want, and kind of the reality of the situation we're in and how we deal with it. And then this quote from the book: "The problem with judging or labeling is that you begin to interpret all data in a way that confirms your judgment." If you think about that, if you make a judgment and then you're just looking for something to confirm what you've already judged, eventually you'll find a big enough data set to say, yeah, I'm right on this. If the example is used of, this child is ungrateful. You look for any example of a child being ungrateful and say, yeah, see, this is just like what I said, rather than looking at, really looking at the total situation, you're trying to look for opportunity to confirm your judgment. And that's true of marriage. So, we're looking for, some judgment about our spouse, and we're just looked there for something that's going to, you see, this is what I told you, you're doing this again. It can be very unfair as far as that. So, any comments, Larry? You look like you get like you had something thoughtful to say.
That never happens. I think, you're about to get into it. I think when someone doesn't listen to our side of the story, we've all been to doctors who were just convinced that they were rushing through, they were behind schedule, and they weren't listening to what I had to say. That's very frustrating when a doctor won't, they just write a prescription for you before they've heard you out. That's just a very frustrating feeling. Unfortunately, we turn right around and do that to the very people we love the most. And we don't listen as well as we should. But since you're about to talk about that, I'll start listening.
And I think we've all had the situation where we've been sitting there and we have no idea what the person has just said. Even though we're supposedly engaged with them in a conversation, at least I am. I'll admit it. And in the book, it had these different levels here around you just ignore the person. These are things within our own frame of reference. We ignore them. We maybe pretend we're listening, catch selective listening. We listen for something that we gets us going and then respond to it. And then attentive listening, where we're listening, we're listening to what's being said. I think that's definitely an improvement. But we want to be in that area on the top there. And I heard Stephen Covey pronounce it empathic rather than empathetic. So I'm going to go with empathetic. That's the way I've always said it. But really what we're talking about is getting in how the other person feels. So within the other's frame of reference, these are kind of, this is within what we think, and we're trying to take it to this fifth level where we're, we're getting into the person's shoes and listening to them that way.
Well, Anthony, I was just thinking about that from a broader context. As far mm-hmm. as worship is concerned, we feel like we know what God wants, so we're going to worship God the way we want, the way we would want to be worshipped in His place, while ignoring what He's trying to tell us. And we almost discount that, saying, no, He wants to be worshipped in this way. And that same thing happens in our marriages and our family. I know best, and I'm going to just assume Lynn wants that new DeWalt power drill for Christmas. And that probably won't go over very well. I've no elbows so far.
But you go for the vacuum instead?
Yeah, I did. The robot one. The Roomba.
A great point. I think this really ripples through everything, and we're going to just as far as empathy, what the definition of that is, capacity to understand or feel what another person's experience from within their frame of reference, capacity to place oneself in another's position, and Covey defines as really listening to get inside another person's mind and heart is called empathetic listening. It's trying to see the world through someone else's eyes. So that's really what we're talking about. And I was surprised with the in the lesson, just all the verses that kind of tied into that. So we're going to talk about those in just a second. But really this concept that people want to be understood, that getting back to this idea of this emotional bank account, that the investment of time to do that will bring much greater returns as you work from an accurate understanding of problems and issues, and a high emotional bank account that results when a person feels deeply understood. And that, to me, that's it is very important that we invest that time and understand what the other person is. And like I said,
Anthony, maybe you have this quote that on page 213, the deepest hunger of the human heart is to be understood.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Anthony.
Yes. Yes.
And also, it's that the goal is to understand the person, not to end the fight or end the disagreement. I'm the oldest of two sisters, and they hate and love me for this reason. But every time we disagree, we will talk for hours and hours until I finally get to the real reason why we disagree, because people will have reasons for their opinions, but lots of times those aren't even the real reasons. And it's worth the hours of talking. It's worth saying, I still don't understand, I still don't understand, until you get to the heart of the issue, because that's when you can start working on the change. That's when you can start fixing it. And too many times I feel like we just want conversations to be over, for arguments to be finished, when the argument is just going to happen in another week or a couple weeks or a month or whatever. We're trying to make progress, not just put band-aids over things.
Very good. And I know I'm in a lot of conversations that you can just tell the other person is not listening. Or everybody's been secure. The other person's not listening. They're just thinking about how they're going to respond when I finish talking. So we definitely don't want to be that person. And I think that gets back to this idea of an emotional bank account. I mean, you don't have trust in somebody that you sit there and you're trying to explain a position or how you feel, and you just know they're not even listening. Right? They're just getting ready to jump on you again. So, really a tough person to talk to, and we definitely don't want to be that kind of person. All right. Did I miss anybody else? Anybody else in the comments? All right. So let's jump into some of our verses that really tie to this. And the first one is really about empathy, the importance of empathy. And, I think, I was, like I said, I was kind of surprised at just all the verses there. There was a couple of that I was thinking of that were in there. But, some of these others, if you think about Jesus, there's a couple of verses about Jesus here. Finding comfort that in the empathy. I think this example in John 11:33, when Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews that came also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled, and said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." And then verse 35, Jesus wept. As we think about that story, what's kind of unusual about this? I mean, what is Jesus getting ready to do? He's getting ready to raise Lazarus. So, in fact, he had told his disciples, he knew exactly what was going to happen. But why do you think Jesus wept here?
He had compassion on Mary and Martha for losing their brother.
Exactly. It's this empathy of being able to put yourself in just the sorrow and pain that they were feeling. Is something we see in Jesus. I think the other verse, and we'll get to it a little later, about we have a high priest that has gone through the things that we have, that has been tempted in the ways that we have. Doesn't that mean, as we think about Jesus, and the things that he's done, why did he come to this earth and go through the things he did, it was the Father's will. But I think part of the comfort in that is that we know Jesus has gone through the things that we've done. I mean, that we've been through. He's experienced disappointment and sorrow. We've seen weeping here. I think there's something comforting for all of us. It's like this first verse here, just to know that somebody understands what we're going through and cares about us. Getting back to that idea of understanding. Andrew?
Think about those situations where you maybe think somebody's really silly for how they're feeling. If anybody had the right to think that, Jesus did here, really. Even though they felt the real emotion, Jesus knew that what they were sad about was not temporary in the sense that we will all be judged by God and raised and profoundly righteous. But in this case, like literally a few hours later, the thing they're sad about is gone. It's remedied. And Jesus could have easily shown up and not been sad at all, and maybe faked it a little bit or something, you know what I mean? Or thought they were silly for how they were feeling, but it wasn't that at all. It was this empathetic feeling for the people that he loved, which is a lot better than I do sometimes.
Yeah, you could maybe understand Jesus rebuking them for not having the faith, or something. But we see the sympathy that he has. Any other comments on either of these verses? All right, let's jump to the next one. Next one here. So Romans 12:15, we're told to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. That idea that you know, we're aware of what a person is going through and we share that with them, this idea of empathy. Now, we who are strong enough to bear the weaknesses of those without strength, and not just to please ourselves. You know, just understanding where people are, back to that idea of walking in their shoes. So there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. That is, that's what we're commanded here, as a body in Christ, and even more as a family, how we should treat each other and act toward each other, and the care that we should have for one another, something we need to challenge ourselves with and work on. All right, continuing on that list, 1 Corinthians 11:29. For he who eats and drinks judgment to himself, if he does not judge the body rightly. We kind of talked about that. Bear one another's burdens, and there fulfill the law of Christ. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word that's good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear it. As we think about that verse, that's a challenge right there, isn't it? I mean, we talked about the pause button earlier. If we are going to respond to our family or our spouse to be able to think about this verse before we get it, we might not be talking too much. We might make some of these conversations easier if we think about it in the light of this. And this wisdom here is something that, I read a book, it was a very popular book called Crucial Conversations, big business book, but really it's all about, this really kind of built on this verse, but, what outcomes are we trying to achieve? I mean, is, are we saying things that are not, that are just tearing people down? That's not going to get us anywhere. And especially if it's someone, we're talking about people, we should love each other, we should love our neighbor, we love our enemies, we should not have this attitude where, I'm going to get even or I'm going to return the insult. We need to really think about what outcome are we trying to achieve by what we say. Is it edifying? Are we doing it out of love? Are we trying to help somebody up and really work on that? All right, any comments on those verses? Yes, sir.
This is in what you said about sometimes we just need to be quiet because we can do more harm than good sometimes by trying to talk. It just reminds me of Job and his three friends that, may have been trying to be empathetic at first, but the best thing they did was keep their mouths shut for a while. So sometimes that's the best thing to do.
Earlier in that same chapter, Ephesians 4, walking in a manner worthy of the calling, blah, 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 with all humility and gentleness and patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace, I think is also very
good. All right.
This is
I think you may need to get a new version. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted. I think some of the same things we've already talked about, this idea of kindness as we talk to others. Here's that verse I mentioned in Hebrews 4. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Very comforting verse. And I think we'll go ahead and we'll jump over to some of these verses on listening. A lot of verses from Proverbs here, very just some great wisdom here.
Before you move on, that verse in Hebrews, just if we struggle with listening, if we struggle with empathy, if we struggle with patience, I think it is a strong temptation to like try and lay out a plan to make sure that we can fix something like this. We need to pray. I think there's a temptation to think that we can handle all these things ourselves and we can suddenly just fix ourselves. But we have to involve God, the one who is empathetic, the one who went through these things yet without sin. It's such an important thing to go to God in prayer about those things, and perhaps involve your wife in that or spouse in that as well. To kind of create that atmosphere of that. But it's a strong temptation to think you can do it yourself, but you need the strength of God to help you with that. And keep your God
prayer. Very good. That's a great point.
I think that is an excellent point, because I think that it gets to the listening and the understanding. And you talked about that pause button you mentioned just a minute ago. Just close your mouth and listen for a second, because when we open our mouth is when we get in trouble. You know, and James deals with that in chapter 3, is the power of the tongue and the destructive, you know, in marriages, again, the people that we're closest to, we say things we ought not to say, and we need to hold our tongue. And to Dustin's point, the point is, you know, James, it's kind of discouraging. He says, you can't control the tongue, but you have to control the tongue. And then he goes on in verse 8, that no human being can ever tame the tongue, and the implication is, you can't without God's help. With God's help, you can, in fact, hit that pause button and just listen for a change. Keep your mouth shut and listen to your spouse and understand what they're trying to talk about.
Any other comments?
Anthony?
Yes, sir.
If you continue from that Hebrews passage and read on in chapter 5, there's a statement that one of the reasons why Jesus endured this and was without sin, it's because he cried out to God. Hebrews 5, verse 7, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death and was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered, and having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him. So Jesus himself, when he was in the flesh, cried out to God and was heard to endure these things and not sin.
Mm-hmm. Great point. All right. Any other comments? Hopefully you got a chance to look at these verses. A wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. Fool does not delight in his understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. I think that one's one that we can relate to. And then finally, he who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. That idea of prescribing without diagnosing goes right with what we studied. Thank you for your attention. Larry, are we going to wrap this?
I'll wrap up this.
We'll wrap this up, and then we'll get into the next habit. Thank you.